Good morning. Today's daf in Gittin Mem Zion. We are starting with the Mishnah Mem Vav Amud Beis, and we are nearing the end of the fourth parak of the Masechta, very large parak here in Gittin, having to do with Tikkun Olam, various institutions that were done by the Chachamim in order to improve certain halachic situations. Okay, it started off all the way back on daf Amud Beis, discussing what happens when a man wants to be mevatel to get that en route to his wife. And from that point going forward, so we discussed other takanas, some of them having to do with Gittin, some of them having nothing to do with Gittin, but an assortment of various takanas. Stay tuned, because we're going to be staying on this topic for the fifth parak as well. Fifth parak is going to be one of the popular prakim in Shas. It's some agarata coming up. Unfortunately, it's timely in terms of the agarata having to do with Churban Beis HaMikdash, which is going to be learned over the course of the 3 weeks. Okay, it's a little bit strange when there's such a coincidence between the Daf Yomi and the time of year, but that's coming up ahead. But me, that's what is that? Nun Hei, Nun Vav. But meanwhile, over here, the fifth parak is going to be, just in terms of the Mishnayos, is going to be thematically connected to the fourth parak, in which we're going to be discussing various takanas that were instituted. So as we are here now on Mem Vav Amud Beis, and we're going to just pick it up where we left off yesterday. We're on the Mishnah, on the bottom of the Amud. Mocher Zatzma Vesbanav Lo Vikochavim. So a person is not only selling himself, but he's selling his children to Goyim. So he's selling himself to a guy. So obviously this person is desperate. In other words, he's extraordinarily short of money, and financially he's in dire straits. Of course, that's the problem. The solution over here is not a good solution. Meaning selling yourself in order to basically raise money, and moreover and worse over, not only is he selling himself, he's selling his children as well. So obviously that is significantly problematic. And what does the Mishnah say? Ein podin oso ava podin sabanim lacher mitzvah aviyim. So as far as he is concerned, as far as the father is concerned, so you're not going to redeem him. But what you are going to do is after the father dies, you're going to go ahead and redeem the children. Don't punish the children on account of the actions of the father. But at the same time, however, I guess just from a practical level, you're not going to be able to redeem the children while the father's alive. Father may just go ahead and just repeat this. Now, I'm kind of giving away the Gemara because I said the word repeat. How did I know that there was a repeated action? So let's go right into the Gemara. Let's jump right into the Gemara. So, Amar Rabbi Asi, Vahu Shemachar, Vishana, Vishilesh. When are we not going to redeem somebody? In other words, you understand, not redeeming somebody is a cold and calculated decision. And we just covered in yesterday's daf, not yesterday, but 2 days ago, so we just covered the mitzvah pigeon shvuyim is a tremendous mitzvah. In other words, it's one of the highest levels of tzedakah, and someone who's taken into captivity, you should redeem him. Now over here, immediately, I could, even without the Gemara, we can make a very simple distinction, and that is that this person over here wasn't taken into captivity; he sold himself in order to be taken into captivity. So there was obviously a financial gain in doing so, and so obviously it's not a classic scenario of Pejon Shvuyin. Still, Rav Asi in the Gemara says is that when are we not going to redeem the individual? That's talking about a case where he did it once, twice, even repeated a third time. So already now he's showing a very clear pattern of behavior, that this is the kind of person that he is, that he's making these poor decisions, selling himself, selling his children into Avdus, and so therefore you cannot redeem him from that point going forward. Hanu b'nei b'michsei di'as v'zuzim av d'kochavim v'lohavir le'lim f'rinu. So also v'gagar b'lohu. Okay, so the Gemara tells the story. Okay, it took me more than a moment to wrap my head around the story. Bei michse usually refers to tax collectors, but that's not what's happening over here. Hanu b'nei bei michse, Rashi simply says, they are just simply people of a particular location. Anyway, so what did they do? They borrowed money from a non-Jew. They defaulted on their loan. And now, the Goyim wanted payment. In other words, they lent the money. They want to get paid. The Jewish people over here defaulted. So what do they do? Oh, okay, fine. So you can't pay. So we'll take you. In other words, in lieu of payment, because you default, so we'll just simply take you. Okay. So, Now they go to Rav Huna. In other words, the question to Rav Huna is, should we redeem these individuals? So Rav Huna said no. And Rav Huna's psak is going to be based on our Mishnah, right? The final Mishnah, the fourth parak of Gittin, which is that if a person is selling himself into Avdus, and there's a financial gain, so then you can't go in and redeem him. So they push back on Rav Huna's psak. I thought that this was all going to be under the circumstance where it was a repeated action. It was a pattern of behavior. Then and only then can you not redeem them. I didn't know that it applies the first time. So Hani Marga Regila Davda Hachi. So Rav Huna's response is, yeah, I know. I'm aware. But what I'm also aware of is that this is a repeated behavior on their part. This is not the first time they borrowed money from a non-Jew. It's not the first time they defaulted, and it's not the first time that they sold themselves in order to pay back the loan. This is something that happened multiple times, and Rav Huna says it's unfortunate, but they simply do not qualify to being redeemed. In other words, they basically fall under the category of our Mishnah over here, of Ein Poden Nosan. Okay. How gover does Av Nafshei L'Ludai? Okay, a person sold himself to Ludain. Okay, we from here until the upcoming Mishnah, boy, oh boy, is it going to get interesting. Ludaim over here are cannibals. Now, previously in the Masechta, not the first time that we saw this group of non-Jews called Ludaim, but over here in the context of our Gemara, we are not describing just non-Jews, but non-Jews who also have an affinity to eating people, otherwise known as cannibals. So this person now is being sold to Ludaim. So he is now going to be enslaved by non-Jews, but worst over, not only is he going to be enslaved, he's also going to be dinner as well. Okay, so obviously he's in a really bad spot. So also coming to Rabbi Ami Amarle, so they go to Rabbi Ami, and the request is very simple. Pirkan, as we're now on the top of Mem Zayin and Aleph, and please redeem us. So Amar Leitanan, Amochrat Smov Esbanov Levikochav Mem Ponoso Ava Ponim Esabanim. So Mishum Kilkula V'Chol Shekein Hacha Dika Ketala. And now he's gonna formulate an argument. Do you know why you should redeem me? I know I sold myself into Goyim. I know that. But here's why you should redeem me. Let's go over that Mishnah again. Let's review. The Mishnah tells us that if somebody sells himself to a non-Jew, so you are not allowed to redeem him. But when he dies, you're allowed to redeem the children. Let's go over the second half of the Mishnah. When he dies, you're allowed to redeem the children. Do you know why that is? I'll tell you why. Because if you leave the children out there, the children are going to be mikulkal. It's funny, we use that word in yesterday's daf in excess. Not in excess, but a lot in yesterday's daf. But obviously yesterday's daf was a totally different context. Over here, the context is very simple, right? You take kids and you put them amongst the goyim. And they're going to be influenced by the people that raise them. In other words, they're not going to be raised Jewish. Okay, basically what we're describing is assimilation. Unfortunately, here in America, right, way too much of it. But okay, that is unfortunately what happens when we're me'urav. So over here, you take children and you put them in a really secular in a non-Jewish world. So okay, they're going to be mekukal. They're not going to be Jewish. So this guy now is arguing to Rabbi Ami, that's the reason in the Mishnah why it is that after the person dies, you redeem the children. So now over here, so now over here, look, obviously what I did was a mistake. I shouldn't have sold myself into these cannibals. But now that I'm here, so this is just as bad. In fact, I can even argue it's worse because not only am I going to be assimilated, can't believe I'm saying this as a sentence, but I'm gonna be eaten. So in other words, so this is obviously, this is for the same reason that you're allowed to be poed to the children, I'm gonna make an argument that you should be able to be poed to me as well. So now Rabbi Ami now is consulting. So he's consulting his colleagues, he's consulting other chachamim. So this guy who sold himself to cannibals, so should we redeem him? Yes or no? So the Chachamim now threw in a little bit of a monkey wrench into the whole discussion, and they said, you know, that guy happens to be a mummer. We see him eating treif. So Amar Lehu, Ei Malatei Avanu Tekachel. So Rabbi Ami says, okay, let's be down the kaf schos. Okay, Rabbi Ami over here, a little bit chassidish, but that's great. And he says, I don't know. He says, okay, he was eating treif, but maybe he was eating treif l'teyavon. Because he has the Yetzirah, not because he's a mormel lahachis. Mormel lahachis is somebody who doesn't necessarily have a Yetzirah, but has a bone to pick with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And therefore is going to go keneged the mitzvahs of the Torah, and it's a philosophical issue, it's a hashkafic issue. But on the other hand, there's the rest of us. The rest of us are just simply tempted because we have a Yetzirah. And so what Rabbi Ami is arguing over here is he's not a mormel lahachis. He's a mormel teyavon. And so he has a Yetzirah. So we shouldn't put him out there on the fringe. He just simply gave into his Yetzirah. So Amar Leva Hazim Nadika Eter V'Yisur Kamay V'Shavik Eter V'Achal Yisurah. So they say to Rabbi Ami, look, it's on one hand, it's great that you're trying to argue on his behalf, and you're Malam Mitzchus, and that's fantastic. It just happens to be we know you're wrong. We know you're wrong. He had in front of him kosher food, non kosher food, and he opted to eat the non kosher food. Now, on one hand, if there's nothing else around and you're tempted by non-kosher food, okay, so you gave into your Yetzirah. On the other hand, if both are in front of you and you're electing to eat non-kosher over that of kosher, what else can you say? He's a mamala hachis. He's not a mamala teyavon. Okay, I mean, I guess you could still argue that the non-kosher food looked better, tasted better. I don't know. The assumption the Gemara is making over here is that it's the same quality. They're both fine. They're both options. Anyway, so Amarlay. So now Rabbi Ami has to turn back to this guy, and basically he has to break the news to the guy. I consulted, and after consultation, the decision unfortunately is no. So Amarlay zil lo kashafti li da aparkinach. So he told the guy, look, you're going to have to go, because I wasn't given permission to go ahead and redeem you. Meaning I consulted, and I don't know, over here in the Gemara's telling over the story, did Rami Ami explain to him, I can't redeem you because you're a mummer? That part's not clear. But he just simply said, the answer is no. Okay. Adkan, that doesn't bring us to the end of the first sugya of this morning, but we are now going to... In the batter's box over here, we're going to have one of the more interesting and unusual stories coming up, certainly as it relates to Reish Lakish. Okay, the story about Reish Lakish, before telling the story of Reish Lakish, first of all, I think we all know, but let's just put it out there. So Reish Lakish was one of the first generation of Amoraim, and he ends up becoming a brother-in-law to Rav Yochanan. Right, the Gemara elsewhere tells us that Rav Yochanan encounters Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish was a bandit. By trade, right? He was a thief. Went around, stole people's things, but also very clever and very cunning. And Rav Yochanan, without going through through the story in any kind of detail, Rav Yochanan basically was Makariv Reish Lakish. Not only was Makariv Reish Lakish, but on top of that, also gave Reish Lakish his sister in marriage. Meaning Reish Lakish noted, it was a funny exchange, Reish Lakish noted that Rav Yochanan was very attractive, very handsome man, and so Rav Yochanan said, fine. So he says, if you come on board and become not only frum but like a real Talmid Chacham, so I'll give you my sister in marriage. Okay, and that was the arrangement that was made. And so Reish Lakish married the sister of Yochanan. Okay, and Rav Yochanan's point was, just like you find me to be attractive, so my sister will be attractive as well. Good. Anyway, so Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan become chavrusas. They become brother-in-laws, and they develop an unbelievably close relationship. Upon the death of Reish Lakish, Rav Yochanan was beside himself. Anyway, so just a brief background. I say all this because Reish Lakish was basically, on one hand, a Talmid Chacham, on the other hand, not a soft individual, right? In other words, he was a hardened individual, right? Early in his life, he was a criminal. So despite the fact that he changed, but in other words, he was a tough guy. I think it's fair to say. And this story over here will be very, very good proof that everything we're saying is correct. Reish Lakish of Anav Shel Luludayim. So Reish Lakish sold himself to the Luludayim. So now, at what point in his life did all this occur? Selling himself to Luludayim, well, what is he out of his mind? And the cannibals are going to go ahead and eat him. So Tosus over here says, look at the top Tosus, Kodem. shechazal lemutav. The mistama lo yemazal sabatzma kolkach. Okay, so Tosla says, look, I think it's only fair to say this happened before it became a Baal Tshuva. In other words, basically the Gemara is recounting for us stories of Reish Lakish before he became from. Okay, and then I'm going to ask the question that I'm not going to have a good answer, which is, why is the Gemara recounting stories like that? Meaning, if we're now describing Reish Lakish in his earlier iteration, in other words, there's certainly interesting stories, right? But generally speaking, the Gemara is going to be spending time telling us stories where we can learn from the stories, right? Maisit Tzadikim. Over here, we're talking about Reish Lakish before he became from. So I admit, and I'm asking, and I don't have an answer, why would the Gemara be telling us this story? It's a fun story. We're going to enjoy hearing it. But like, why is the Gemara spending precious time going over the story? Good. I asked the question. I don't have a great answer. Okay. If you have a suggestion, certainly open.
No matter how low you were.
Okay, fine. Right. In other words, right. Yeah, right. In other words, it speaks to. I like that. Okay, Rav Chaim suggested that it speaks to the idea that he was such a hard man that the and still he was a Baal Tshuva. Still became a Baal Tshuva. Okay, good. Anyway, so Reish Lakish Shav and Nafshalu died. So he sold himself to the cannibal. Shakal ba'adei chaisa v'gugalasa. So what did he bring with him? So he brought with him like a ball of yarn. Okay, loose translation. Forgive me for not getting it perfectly right. And on top of that, also like a really heavy item, right? Some sort of really heavy metal, like a lead or something like that, and or a stone. And what he did is he put it in the ball of yarn. Okay. So in other words, it looked like a nice soft ball of yarn, but meanwhile it was weighted. So Amar Gemiri Diuma Basra called the Bay Minayu Abdilei Ki Hech Dilei Chalad Mei. So now he turns to the cannibals, and now he is basically right before he's about to be killed and cooked. And he turns to the cannibals and he says, I want to introduce you to an idea. It's called the last request. Okay. You and I over here know about this. We've seen enough movies. And so we're all familiar with the last request. Okay. So for you and I, it's kind of like obvious, but I guess these cannibals never heard of such a thing. Very interesting, by the way, that Reish Lakish says to them, you know what this last request is all about? It's all about kapara, right? Ki heichi delechol admei. So there will be a mechila, right? In other words, if you fulfill my last request, so then I'm not really sure how to say this over correctly, but I won't be so angry with you, right? And even though you're going to cook me and eat me, like in other words, like it'll be fine, and there'll be mechila, and you'll have a kapara. Okay. Anyway, again, however, to understand this exchange over here. But basically, we all understand the basic idea of a last request, a final request. So Yuma Basra Amalei Mainichalach. So they said, okay, you want a final request? What do you want? So Amalehu Bein Ak Matinchu VeUzvinchu VeChochamin Aichu Amchai Chayte Apaga. So he says, what I'm going to basically do is I'm going to tie you up and I'm going to hit you with this like soft ball of yarn. Okay, so and you know what I mean. And for me, it's going to like, you know, it'll be fun. And you're, of course, not going to get hurt, meaning it's just a ball of yarn. Okay, so you guys are good with that, right? So, Kamtina Bosvinu, so that's exactly what he did. He tied them up, and now he sat them down, and Kolchad Minau Kadmache Chad Chaisa Nafak Nishmasei. Now, this ball of yarn was significantly weighted. He hit each one of them only one time, and they died. In other words, that's how heavy it was, and that's how strong Reish Lakish was. Now he started grating the teeth. Okay, not exactly sure what's happening over here, but basically he's manufacturing sound out of the room in which he's killing them. So in other words, the final request was to hit you a time and a half. So I only hit you once, but now I get to hit you another half time. Kalina Kulu, he kills all of them. Nafak Vasa. And after that point in time, he left. Okay. Okay, good. Right, Nafak Vasa, period. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of story number one. Okay. I admit that this is a strange story that we just went over with Reish Lakish. But nevertheless, Reish Lakish being sold to the cannibals, just to take stock of what we've been doing the last couple of days in the daf, here in the fourth parak of Gittin, at the end of the fourth parak of Gittin, we went over a story with Rav Nachman and his daughters, and basically the Rav Nachman's daughters practicing sorcery, right, stirring a pot with their bare hands, stirring a boiling pot with their bare hands, and we just went over a couple days later, today's daf, the story of Reish Lakish and him killing the cannibals, who were in fact planning on eating him. Okay, it's been some ride. Yasef ka'achav ashasi. So as long as we're here, we're about to get to the next Mishnah, but a couple more end notes regarding Reish Lakish. Number one, he is about to sit down to eat and drink. So amalei barte lo bais mida lemigzah leha. So the daughter said to Reish Lakish, "Can I get you a pillow, a cushion, something to lean on?" So amalei biti kresi kari, and his response is, "My stomach is my pillow." So basically. What I like to do is, I like to lie down on my stomach. In other words, basically, he must have had some sort of stomach. It's kind of funny, by the way, the Gemara elsewhere tells us that Rav Yochanan was of a round figure. In other words, Rav Yochanan was a Baal Basar. And over here, it certainly you get the sense that Reish Lakish also, right, he had a little bit of flesh. He had something that he can lean on. Anyway, kinach nafshe shavek kava demurika evikara nafshe va'azvul acherim chelam. So when Reish Lakish died, so he had kava demurika. Marika is a type of spice. We can even call it an expensive spice. And basically, that was his entire estate. His entire estate was made up of a kav of this, I think in English it's translated saffron, right? Okay, good. I got it right. Oh. What a day. So he left it over, and he was upset that he had that much over. Okay, he's either saying it literally or sarcastically, but either way, the point is that he was of the very serious financial belief that a person should leave nothing over for his children. What's the point? Now, mind you, by the way, this is not my advice that I'm providing. I am just explaining the thought process of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is basically saying, now look, in other words, what are you going to do? You're going to accrue a massive wealth only to give it to your kids and you yourself are not going to enjoy it? What was the point of that? Okay, so whether or not that's the correct way to view estate and how to treat your estate, so I'll leave that for somebody else to discuss. I'm not here to give you what I would believe is the correct Torah perspective because I don't know. But I do know, however, in other words, our Gemara is clearly of the position that Reish Lakish was of the opinion that you should leave nothing over. And the fact that as he was dying, he had a little bit of saffron left over that he didn't enjoy. So, azvul acherim chelam. Right? Basically, I'm leaving it for other people. In other words, I didn't get to enjoy it. He had regrets that he had that much that he left over. Okay, almost done. Here we are in Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, and this is it. This is going to be now the final Mishnah that's going to take us to the end of the fourth parak of the Masechta. The conclusion of the fourth parak will not be till tomorrow, right? We still have the Mem Ches Amud Aleph and a little bit of Amud Beis to do, but here we are now finishing up. Okay, you sell your land to a guy. You're in Eretz Yisrael. You're selling your land to a guy in Eretz Yisrael. So what you got to do is you got to go back and you got to go pick up the Bikurim and bring the Bikurim. Okay. So I guess we'll start here. Are you allowed to sell your land to a guy in Eretz Yisrael? The answer is unequivocally no. We already talked about this earlier in our Masechta, and principally this topic is discussed in detail in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Okay, I hope my memory is good, but somewhere around Dav Chaf Aleph in Avodah Zarah, so it discusses this in much greater detail. That is the Ikar Gemara discussing that you're not allowed to sell land to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, in other words, the land is ours, and we should be the owners of it, and selling it to a guy already is not correct. But the sale is still valid, and so what now happens to land that's owned by a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael? So I'm going to give you one of two options, and in the course of today's daf, the Gemara is going to entertain both options. Option number one is that it's still Eretz Yisrael, meaning it still has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. I, a guy, owns it. Okay, a guy owns it. But in other words, but the land has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Anything that grows from that land is going to be Chayv and Trumas and Maestros. And the ownership of a guy is not going to be Mafkia. It will not uproot the Kedusha. That's option number one. Option number two is that opposite. In other words, that when a guy owns a land in Eretz Yisrael, it no longer has the Kedusha. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael will be a function, will be a predicate of a Jew owning that land. But if a non-Jew owned that land, so then he's going to be Mafkia, the Kedusha. Anything growing in that land is not going to be Chayv and Trumas and Maestros. Okay. Why am I presenting two options? Because as we're going to be seeing in our Gemara, it's a major machlokus in terms of what happens to the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael when that particular parcel of land is owned by a non-Jew. So the two positions that I just posited are in fact going to be two valid opinions amongst our Mesora. Let's start with the Gemara. Amar Rabba. Afa pishen kinyo lo v'kochavim be Eretz Yisrael lafki amidei ki li ha'aretz. So li kedusha ha'aretz aval yesh kinyan lo v'kochavim be Eretz Yisrael lachbar ba baruch shechem ha'aretz shenemar shamayim shamayim la'shem v'aretz nasan levnei adam. Okay, so Rabba's of the position that even though if a guy were to purchase Eretz Yisrael, he will not be able to be mafkia. He cannot remove the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore it still retains Kedusha of Eretz. Still, however, it's going to be a kinyan. In other words, it's going to be his. And when you buy land, what can you do with it? Whatever you want. In other words, once you are the owner of the land, right? I'm sure, in other words, we have to deal with zoning issues and so forth and so on. But nevertheless, when you're the owner of the land, so that means that by right, you could do whatever you want with the land. And so according to Rabba, in other words, you're going to have to hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. One, it still has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Two, he has rights to the land and he could do what he wants to the land. He wants to dig a big hole in the land, he could do so. Okay, so fine. So that is the shita of Rabba. Rabba Lazar, Omer, Afa Pishyesh Kinyan Lo V'Kocham Be'Eretz Yisrael, Lafki Amidei Maiser, Shenemar, Digan Chavalo, Digan Kochavim, Aval Ein Kinyan Lo V'Kocham Be'Eretz Yisrael, Lachbar Bar Bar Shechen Umaharu, Shenemar Lashem, Lahashem Haaretz. So the, so basically, Rabba Lazar now is going to take the exact polar opposite position. On one hand, So when the guy purchases a piece of Eretz Yisrael, so now he is mafkia. Anything growing in that land is going to be not subject to Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, not going to be subject to the mitzvos atluyos baris, is going to not be chayv and trumas maestros. That's true. And at the very same time, according to Rav Elazar, that land is zoned. And what he cannot do is that he can't just simply start digging into the land. In other words, he has to keep the land as is. He has to preserve the land in its original state, even though he was mafkia from Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. So, okay, this is obviously, both of those positions, Rabba and Rav Elazar, are certainly interesting. And what does the, and the fact that each one of them basically takes the opposite viewpoint regarding not only Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, but also zoning as well, That's a really interesting view. The Gemara gives a voice to the machlokas. Now, the simple reading of the Gemara, which is what we're going to be doing this morning, is that the Gemara is explaining only the first issue of Havka'as Kedusha and not the second issue regarding zoning. Now, the truth of the matter is that why aren't we going to be arguing regarding zoning? Because they already did. Meaning, if you look back and you read carefully each of the positions, Rabba's of the position that they want to go ahead and dig and do whatever they want with the property, even though it still has Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, but it's theirs, and they can go ahead and dig holes. How do I know that? Because it says, Hashamayim, Shamayim, Hashem, Aretz, Nasan, Livnei Adam. Because who's the owner of the land? We're the owner of the land. In other words, and so therefore, once you own land, you can do with it what you want. That's Rabba. And what Rabbi Lazar will tell you, again, all I'm doing is just reviewing what we read already, and what he'll tell you is, Lahashem Haaretz Umalawa, that the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, it's not our land, it's Hashem's land. We just have certain rights to it. And when you buy land, so can you start digging holes in it? No. Even though it's the same Rebbe Elazar, I know this part's tricky. It's the same Rebbe Elazar who says that when the guy buys the land, you know what? No longer has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Let's just remind ourselves. In the beginning of the sixth parak of Brachos, the Gemara notes that these two psukim that we just cited, right? Shamayim Shamayim LaHashem V'Haaretz, the son Livnei Adam, the land is given to us, meaning basically we are the owner. And the other pasuk of LaHashem HaAretz Melo'a, land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara is bothered because basically the two psukim are at odds with one another. What do you do with the steer between the two psukim? Remember the Gemara in Brachos? The Gemara in Brachos says, Kan Lifnei Bracha, Kan Lachar Bracha. Meaning when you're holding the apple in your hand, you're ready to eat the apple, who does it belong to? It belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. LaHashem HaAretz Melo'a. Then what do? You make a bracha. What happens after the bracha? Now it becomes yours. Haaretz nasan livnei adam. So in other words, basically it's Hashem's before the bracha. After you make the bracha, it becomes yours. Which, by the way, in terms of making brachas on foods, so we call it a birchas anenin, from that gemara over there, it's more than just a bracha. No, it's a bracha that gives you permission to go ahead and eat it. Okay. Anyway. Let's stay focused on our Gemara. We have just presented a basic machlokis regarding Amoraim, Rabban, Rav Elazar. When a guy owns land in Eretz Yisrael, was there a Hafkas Kedusha? Yes or no? And we just learned together that according to Rabba, there is no Hafkas Kedusha. And therefore it remains... It remains Kadosh, and according to Rabbi Lazar, there is Hafkas Kedusha. So first and foremost, the Gemara is going to try to prove of which of these positions seems to be the more correct position. Amar Rabbi Menamin Allah Dinan Leket Shichcha Peyash Ol VeKochavim Chayavim BeMaiser Ela Im Kain Hifkir. If I have either any one of these Matnos Aniyim, okay, I'm not going to go through each one of them right now, but anyway. So they're chayv and meiser, unless you were mafkir, unless you declared it ownerless. So hechidami, exactly that mishnah. That's a mishnah in peah. But what we need is a little more context for that mishnah in peah. Let's understand it a little bit better. I skipped a line. I'm sorry. I'm gonna go back. Right. I was so focused on the LaHashem HaAretz and the steer between the two, I briefly skipped a line of Gemara. Sorry. B'mai kamifligi. Okay. The machlokas, I was wondering to myself, did we give the svaras for the two positions? Not yet. B'mai kamifligi. I'm sorry, I'm just backing up just a little bit. So, mar savar digancha, velo digano v'kochavim, mar savar diguncha, velo diguno v'kochavim. Okay. So, the basis for the two positions, let's start off with the sheet of Rebbe Elazar. Even though Rebbe Elazar was presented number two, but let's present him right now. Number one is because the pasuk says digancha. Digancha means when it's your grain. So that means to say that when it's your grain, i.e., grain that grew from land that was owned by a Jew, then and only then is it going to be chayv and chumas and maestros. Otherwise, it's not going to be chayv and chumas and maestros. And according to Rabba, same word digancha, but in other words, but the way he's going to articulate, in other words, he's not changing the pronunciation, but in terms of the drush, this is how he's going to understand it. Diguncha, the act of finishing it off. We know that when is there a chiyuv of Trumas HaMaisros? Only at the Gemar Malacha, meaning growing the grain and harvesting are all steps in the process. But when does the chiyuv actually kick in? When you do what's called digun. Digun is putting all the harvested grain together, collecting it, and leveling it off, so you know exactly how much that is. Otherwise known as the gemar malacha. Then and only then is it going to be chayv and chumas and maestros. And the way Rabbah understands the pasuk is that as long as that was done by a Jew, it's going to be chayv and chumas and maestros. What about the fact that let's say the land was owned by a non-Jew and the non-Jew grew the produce, harvested the produce, v'chule v'chule v'chule, according to Rabbah, still, as long as the digun is done by a Jew, it's going to be chayv and chumas and maestros. Okay. Good. So, so just a short word, literally a word that is going to inform both the Shita of Rabbah and Rabbi Lazar whether or not produce that is land that's owned by a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's subject to the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, Chayv and Shumas or Maestros. So it's a machlokas. Am Rabbah Mana Min Allah Dinan. So Rabbah says, how do I know I'm right? Because of the following. Okay, now we get to say it again. Mishnah and Peah. Leket Shicha. Leket Shicha Vapeah. Shel Ovekochav Mechayav Memaiser Elaim Kain. Elaim Kain Hivker. So it's going to be Chayav Memaiser unless you declared it ownerless. Hey Chidami. That Mishnah and Peah. The Gemara says, I want to understand it better. Elaim Di Yisrael. Now, the land over here is owned by who? If it's owned by a Jew, Viliktinu, Ove Kochavim, and what happened was is that the non-Jew went ahead and he gathered it, so I don't understand. Ela Imkein Hifker, Ha Mafkari Vekaime. I don't understand. Meaning, when the Mishnah describes that you have to be Mafkari, it's already Mufkar. Meaning, if the land is owned by a Jew and we're talking about the pay of the corner of the field, and other matnosanim already, it is hefker. What does it mean? You have to be mafkerit. Elalav doviko chavim. So rather, the land belonged to a non-Jew, and he left off leket shicha and peah v'liktinu Yisrael, and we had a Jew go ahead and collect it. So time of the hefker. So halo hefker chayav. So now, what do we say that the Jew can go ahead and collect it, but only if the non-Jew was mafker. But if the non-Jew was not mafker, so then it would be Chayv and Trumas and Maisos. Or, I understand over here we're not talking about Trumas and Maisos. We're talking about Matnos Aniyim. But right now we're assuming that it's all the same. Meaning that once you have the obligations of Hafrasha, so that means to say that it had Kedusha. So over here from this Mishnah and Peah, it certainly sounds like this Mishnah and Peah is describing land owned by a non-Jew. The produce was grown by him. It was collected by a Jew. And it sounds like from the Mishnah and Peah, it's chayv in all of the mitzvot that Tluyos Bar. It's low. The Gemara says not a good proof. The land is owned by a Jew. V'lektinu ovei kocham, and the non-Jew collected it. Udika amar. Now, what was your problem with that? Ha mafkarei v'kaimei. The language of the Mishnah is that you have to declare it ownerless. What are you talking about? It's already ownerless. Nihi de mafkarei d'Yisrael d'ovei kocham mi mafkarei. No, hefker means anyone can have access to it. Meaning, if I have a land owned by a Jew and the matnos aniyim are hefker to the Jewish population, not to the non-Jewish population, and so therefore, even though the Mishnah uses the words he has to be mafkerit, we can even understand it in the context of a Jew owning it. Tashma Yisrael shalakach sadamei avikochav imachalo ivishlish v'chazor machulo mishu ivishlish so chayeves b'maiser shekvar nischayva. Okay, so over here, this is a b'risa. The b'risa over here, a little bit complicated, but basically what happens is as follows. We know that in order for the growth of any produce to get significant, it has to get to a third of its development. Havar shlish is a critical moment in the development of the grain. So now, the land was owned by a Jew. Let's start again. The land was owned by a non-Jew. A Jew purchased it before Havar Shlish. Now, the Jew tended to the land, owned and tended to the land, so that the produce now went over the critical threshold of a Shlish of a third. Then what happened is that the Jew sold it back to the non-Jew. So, is it going to be Chayv and Maaser? The answer is yes. Why? Because it was under Jewish ownership during that critical period of Havar Shlish. So nischayva in lo nischayva lo. So, and over here in this bright site, isn't it pretty clear that had it not transferred hands to the Jews during this critical period, and had it been owned by the non-Jew over the course of its growth, including the most critical moment of its third, so then it's not going to be chayv and trumas and maisros. So a simple reading of this bright site would say that land owned by a non-Jew is not chayv and trumas and maisros. So hachem maiskin and besuria. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but maybe what the Bryce is describing over here is not land in Eretz Yisrael, land in Surya. Surya, Aram Tzova. We just went over this a couple days ago in the Daf. Meaning that there is land that is annexed to Eretz Yisrael, conquered by David HaMelech. It is what's called Kivush Yachid. It does not have the full status of Eretz Yisrael. On one hand, it's going to be subject to the laws of Trumas and Maisos. On the other hand, we're going to be more makel with it. Why? Because it's not a full annexation. And therefore, we'll say that if non-Jews own Surya land, then Hafka'a, then it's not going to be Chayv and Trumas and Maisos. The Bryce that we just learned together was talking about land in Surya. Tashma, Yisrael Bavikocham, Shalachu, Sade B'Shutfus. We're in the top of the Amud Beis. So Teva V'chulam, Rav and Zeb said, Divrei Rabbi Rishon ben Gamliel Omer, Shal Ovei Kochav and Pater, V'shal Yisrael Chayev. I have land-owned partnership, Jew and non-Jew, and we go ahead and we harvest, and now that harvested grain, 50% of it is owned by a non-Jew, 50% of it is owned by a Jew. The 50% that's owned by a non-Jew is not subject to Trumas and Maisros. The 50% that is owned by a Jew is Chayev. So what do I do with this mixture? So, two different approaches, Rebbe and Rosh Hashanah Gamliel. I'll tell you what, we have to say it over. What are they arguing about? Whether or not we can go ahead and separate the 50%. Meaning, we don't know which belongs to which, and what we're going to do now is that we're going to split the shares physically, and then I'll say that the shares that I received are mine, the shares that we received are yours. Is that going to be a reflection of the original division? In other words, Breira. So the Gemara says they're arguing. Ad kan lo pligi ela. Demar sover yesh breira, mar sover ein breira. Aval du kule ama yesh king lo vikocham. Meretz Yisrael lafki amide meiser. Now, it gets complicated because do we subscribe to Breira or not? If we subscribe to Breira, so the Jew will get which 50%? The one that was always going to be his. And therefore, all of his is going to be Chayv Trumas HaMaisos, and all the 50% of the non-Jew is not going to be Chayv Trumas HaMaisos. And that's if I subscribe to Breira. If I don't subscribe to Breira, so that means that the 50% that I receive is going to be a blend of that which is Chayv and that which is not Chayv. And then it gets a little bit more complicated in terms of how to resolve the problem. We don't have to resolve that problem right now. All we need to do is make a simple observation. This land that's jointly owned by Jew and non-Jew, the part of the land that's owned by a non-Jew, is not Chayv and Trumas HaMaisos. That's all we need to observe. And if that's true, so, okay, good. Aren't we now done? Like, we can go home now, right? So to which the Gemara says, not necessarily. So the Gemara says, Ad kan lo pligi el, no, I read that. So hachanami b'soria v'kasav kibushach losh me kibush. Okay, to which the Gemara says, nah. Once again, this is not going to be a proof because once again, what I'll do is I'll take this brisa that we just learned together and I'll say this brisa is not describing Eretz Yisrael proper. In Eretz Yisrael proper, what I'll tell you is that land owned by a non-Jew is still going to be Chayv and Trumas and Maisos. And this brisa that we're learning together is describing Surya. Again, Surya is that mid-level land which it does not have the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, but it has a partial Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. It's not fully annexed. It's only partially annexed. It's kibush yachid. And so therefore, it is subject to Trumas and Maisos. But if a non-Jew owned land in Surya, not going to be subject to Trumas and Maisos. Okay. Okay, let's pause over here. Okay, because then now we're going to go back to our Mishnah. We're going to be discussing Bikurim. And let's pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with the Bikurim discussion. Okay, let's quickly review. Let's recap our daf today. So number one, someone who sells themselves to a non-Jew and then asks, demands to be redeemed. So can you reward poor decision-making like that? So the Mishnah said no. Although the Gemara said that's only when he demonstrates a pattern of behavior. In other words, he sold himself once, twice, three times he sold himself to a non-Jew. So from that third time going forward, so at that point in time, you no longer can reward him. You no longer can redeem him. At that point in time, his decision-making is so poor that you simply have to say no to him. That's a very tough no, but you have to say no to him. And then the Mishnah pointed out that after he dies, you're going to go ahead and you're going to redeem his children. And we were privileged this morning to hear some amazing stories, a couple of them having to do with being sold to cannibals. And then capped off today with a story regarding Reish Lakish having sold himself to cannibals. Tosus is insistent that story is talking about Reish Lakish before he became a Baal Tshuva. Anyway, so that is what we saw in the Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Then, selling your land to a non-Jew, you have to go ahead into the land and you have to take off Bikurim. We have yet to discuss, we're going to be doing it first thing tomorrow morning, Yirtzeh Hashem. We have yet to discuss why do you have to go into the land and why do you have to take Bikurim? The land is not yours. But today we touched on the fundamental question. When you sold that land to a non-Jew, aside from the fact that you shouldn't have done it as per the Gemara Avodah Zarah, but aside from that, in other words, does the produce now growing in that land that's owned by a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael, so is that produce going to be subject to Trumas and Maisos? Major machlokas amongst the Amoraim, a machlokas Rabban Rav Elazar. And for the balance of today's daf, we went over that machlokas. Okay, Adkar.